financial planning, and security can sometimes be seen as a moving target. The rules change constantly, and you need guidance to stay ahead of the market moves. This is the Labenthal Report with Michael Hartzman and Dominic Tavella. We'll break down the news, trends, and overall direction of the markets, telling you what may be coming next, investment opportunities, and what to avoid. Now, here are your hosts, Dominic Tavella and Michael Hartzman.
All right, I'm Michael Hartzman. Today is Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022. And I'm on, as always, with my partner, Dominic Tavella. How are you, Dom?
Doing well, Mike. Good evening.
Good evening. So, Dom, I guess for the last couple of weeks, we could breathe a little sigh of relief. July started the third quarter off pretty handsomely. The S&P was up 9.22%. The Dow up 6.8, and the NASDAQ, you know, as always, the NASDAQ always seems to go down the most and go up the most. The NASDAQ was up almost 12.5%. So far, so good. You and I have been talking for a while about a recovery. If we got some decent news, some, you know, the Fed would give the market what it wanted. Earnings were not terrible. So here we are, July, we could breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah, and a couple of quick points, Mike. The first is it looks like the indices hit the year low about mid-June. So it's been a pretty good rally off the bottoms, and it's not unusual, even in a bear market, to see markets rally higher. In some cases, really strong rallies, and I think this one was really powerful, Mike. And a lot of reasons for it, including that some of the inflation data that's embedded in the economy seems like perhaps it's starting to roll over. And I think a big focus also is earnings have been pretty decent, not spectacular, but decent. So it doesn't show that companies' earnings are falling off a cliff. And of course, some passive, maybe not aggressively negative remarks from Chairman Powell and the Fed that interest rates, you know, will be data dependent. And there's a possibility for a little bit easing up on how aggressive they're going to be later in the year. So pretty good month here, Mike. It shows the danger of trying to time getting in and out of the market. That would have been terrible timing for a lot of people who just couldn't take the pain anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, we're not market timers, never have been, never will be. And, you know, a lot of the things we look at is frequently anecdotal. And for instance, in the beginning of the year, the market was going down on good news. In the last 2 weeks, you know, interest rates went up again, which you know, could not necessarily good news for many, many millions of people. We may not be in a recession. We had two negative quarters. And not that necessarily the market went up on bad news, but it didn't get killed on bad news. And that, to me, is a positive.
Well, it is, Mike, and we're going to talk about headline risk in a minute. But
right.
It is a scenario where the first part of the year, the sole focus of everybody, the markets, us, was inflation. And clearly, we got some really bad numbers. We've talked about that in the past. Now the focus has shifted to possibly recession. And we didn't get great data on the second quarter earning GDP number. It also came in negative. So I think there's an increased possibility for a real recession later on in the year. And maybe, you know, if the Fed doesn't do a good job on this one, possibly a deep recession. So the focus has shifted from inflation to recession. And part of that is bad news is good news with regard to where interest rates are going to go.
You know, and I have to give you credit. As many of our listeners know, Dom, you're a frequent contributor on Fox Business News. And you and I have been talking that 75 basis points was kind of the Goldilocks number that the market was looking for. And you did an interview about 10 days ago, right before the announcement, where, you know, maybe they were questioning your judgment, let's say, whether 75 basis points was the right move. And I have to give you credit. You know, you and I have talked about it frequently on the show, you know, when we see each other. We really thought that was the right number. And you stuck to your guns on national TV. And let me be the first to acknowledge that you were, in fact, correct on national TV, and we got that 75 basis point hike as we predicted and you predicted.
Well, thanks, Mike. I mean, at the end, look, we don't have a crystal ball that works, right? We're looking at the data and then trying to interpret what that actually means. And of course, what the Fed's reaction going to be to the same data that we're looking at. But as you mentioned, Mike, you and I speak about it daily. We're looking at the data daily. We're talking to some of the best money managers on the planet daily, weekly. And so, look, I could have certainly gotten it wrong. That's a strong possibility, because you just never know what the Fed's going to do in those circumstances. But we obviously got that one right. But I think I'll take that interview a step further by saying, Mike, the real discussion got into recession versus non-recession. And, you know, we did get a second quarter that was negative. And, you know, there's a lot of people like myself that look at two consecutive quarters, negative quarters, as being a recession. Technically, that's not correct. There's a institution that gauges a whole bunch of factors that measures it, but we are not in a deep recession as we speak. And that was also one of the discussions on that show. And I'm still going to stand by that, Mike. At this point, we are not in one of those deep 2008, 9/11, 2001 type recessions. It's possible we get there, but right now the economy's kind of, you know, humming along, not as great as it could be, but not the deep, vicious recession that we've used to in the past.
And we've talked about this on previous shows. If we are in a recession, and there's a high possibility we are, this one would be a bit of an anomaly because in employment and the labor market is still phenomenally tight.
Yeah, I actually looked this up. There's an institution, if they're called the NBER, that actually calls it recession or non-recession. And there's a lot of factors in there, I think a dozen or so. But, you know, employment numbers, company growth, there's so many other factors that come into whether calling this a recession or not. And again, we may get there. That's one of the fears that the market has. But the reality, again, is that we're not there yet. And I don't like, you know, when we're frightening people that it might be or is or we are. I like to be more factually based if it's possible.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. That's what's the frustrating part, right? Is the media, you know, loves to lead with the R word, right? Loves to lead with the idea of a possible recession. And quite frankly, Dominic, consumers don't care what they call it or when they call it. You know, our clients don't care. What they care is how does it affect me? How does it affect my ability?
Do I have a job tomorrow, right?
Can I feed my family?
Going to make money and stay in business?
Yes. That's what they care about. So whether we're technically in a recession or not, you know, it's been a challenging first six months of the year, and I think from the market's point of view, you know, they hate uncertainty. So I think the market is treating this, Dominic, actually as if we are, and if we're not, then the market will cheer that. That's my opinion.
And I think it's an excellent opinion, Mike. And just for our clients' perspective, it matters to us because based on whether we are or not going into a recession, and then whether it's a mild one or a deep dive one, it really is important, for example, what kind of bonds we own. Do we want to own really very short-term, very high-quality, safe interest-bearing bonds or more speculative, aggressive, high-yield bonds? Same thing with stocks, boring blue chip versus speculative growth. So the kinds of investments we hold in our client portfolios are really relevant. That data is really important. But for the average person out there, you know, when they're sitting down at dinner time and they got the news on, and as you mentioned, Mike, every channel does this, you know, it sells, right? And so look, we have enough to be frightened about. Maybe we will be frightened about this one later on in the year and early next year. Not today.
And this is why you're a veteran of over 500 TV hits on a business channel. That was a phenomenal segue because our guest this evening is Robert Morgan, who, lo and behold, is the director of fixed income at DCM Advisors with a specialty in the municipal bond market, another topic near and dear to our heart. And he will be joining us after the break to discuss many of the things you just mentioned, Dom.
Thanks, Mike.
We will be right back right after this break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Are you paying federal taxes on your cash? I work hard for my money that I keep in cash. And for the life of me, I can't imagine why anyone would want to pay federal taxes on their cash. That's why I keep my cash in the Lebenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund, symbol L-E-T-A-X, the tax.
Rates on cash are already so low, why pay federal taxes on the interest your cash earns? Remember, it's not what you earn, it's what you keep. The Lebenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund, L-E-T-A-X, may help you earn more on the cash you've worked hard for and keep more after-tax dollars in your pocket. Find out more about the fund by speaking with a Lebenthal Global Advisors private wealth advisor or its sponsor at dcmadvisors.com.
For your hard-earned cash, why pay the tax when there's the tax?
Lebenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund. It's not what you make, it's what you keep.
Before investing, you should carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. This and other information is in the prospectus, a copy of which may be obtained by calling 800-441-7031. Please read the prospectus carefully before you invest. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. There is no guarantee that this or any investing strategy will be successful. An investor should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the fund carefully before investing. The fund is distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC, member FINRA. The fund may invest in municipal securities, the interest on which may be subject to federal alternative minimum tax. After the fund buys a security, the IRS may determine that a bond issued as tax-exempt should in fact be taxable. There is no affiliation between DCM Advisors, LLC, and Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC. DCM Advisors and Ultimus Fund Distributors are not affiliated with Lebenthal Financial Services, Inc., or Lebenthal Global Advisors, LLC.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to the Lebenthal Report. If you're listening to the show live, join in on our discussion with questions or comments at 1-866-472-5790. Again, that's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to contact@lebenthal.com. Now, back to the Lebenthal Report.
All right, I'm Michael Hartzman, back with my partner, Dominic Tavella, and our guest this evening, Robert Morgan, who's a director of fixed income at DCM Advisors, based out of New York City. How are you doing tonight, Robert?
I'm doing very well, gentlemen. Good evening.
Welcome.
Thank you for making the time, Robert. We had you on in the middle of the year, or the middle, I should even preface, the middle of the muni bond train wreck, where it literally for, I seem like 60, 70, 80 days in a row, values of muni bonds deteriorated a tick or two a day, just torturous. And you predicted, we thought of, obviously we've been doing this a long time, eventually it would end. It's ended. So we need you to verify that it's ended, we think, And you know, why has it ended? You know, kind of what's changed?
Well, and Rob, I just want to set the stage. At one point, and I think it was around the time we did the show with you, muni bonds were down 10% for the year.
Yes.
I mean, people who are holding these interest-bearing bonds really were, I want to say, almost in panic mode. And I think that's one of the major reasons we had you on.
Yeah. We went over four decade worst decline at one point.
Yeah, it was. We had a very rough spring, but you know, fortunately for us, things have turned around tremendously. I think part of it is the psyche that we are coming to the end of this. You know, this inflationary rate hike. We've got this concern that our bonds are going to and our interest is going to be worth less. Our present value of money is going to be worth less, and we're seeing this situation where we're now going towards the idea that the Fed will start slowing and eventually halting, and then a few months past that, start cutting rates again. Now, which is a little extreme, plays into the narrative that you guys, you gentlemen were talking about when we were talking about the potential for a recession, because that's what the Fed would need to do if we go back in, if we go into a recession or have a deeper recession, depending on how you want to define it, but a situation where we're seeing job cuts, we're seeing unemployment numbers go up. The Fed would have to take their foot off the rate hike gas, and they'd have to stop and then actually start to try and stimulate the economy again. Now, one of the things, one of the many ways that people can look at this is by looking at the Fed futures. And right now, what the Fed futures are telling us is towards the end of this year, we're going to see a plateau in height on rates coming from the Fed. So after that, potentially, and this is the market makes bets. It's got nothing certain, but the market is saying towards next spring, we could see rates going lower, the Fed actually cutting the Fed funds rate. Now, take everything with like that with a grain of salt, but that's what's helping motivate the market. Now, municipals had not only double-digit losses by the end of May, they had an extreme amount of cash flow cash leaving the market. So, and that was one of the things that precipitated this downswing, was people were taking their money.
That was a lot of people selling, right, Rob?
A lot of people selling.
That's a polite way of saying a lot of people were selling when bond prices were really low.
Absolutely. Now, the big question is, what did they do with that money? They left it in cash. And that money is now turned around since basically, let's just take from the end of June, the market has turned around completely because that cash is now coming into the market. Municipal bonds, for what they are, we tend to be a little bit like lemmings. We're always running in the same direction for the most part. The best thing you can try and do is stand still on occasion. But this is one of those situations where, you know, starting after the Fed hike in June, the recession idea started to take hold. The fact that in a recession, Fed can't raise rates, et cetera, and everyone went, I've got all this cash. I've got 10-year municipal bonds that could get me, you know, 3%, 3.25%. And everyone decided to come into the market. We all came in on the same time. So consequently, June was a blockbuster month for us. We were up 2.6% overall in the market, which is one of the best months we've had since we had the liquidity crisis in 2020, where everything really went crazy. And what's that? What that's done is we've cut our losses, so to speak. We're now only down, you know, maybe 7.5% of the year. We're looking fairly strong, and that looks to continue as long as the narrative is either things are going to come in for a soft landing or things are going to come down into a recession. But one way or another, inflation is going to be under control and the Fed's not going to keep hiking rates. So a lot of what we're seeing here is a look forward into 6 months down the road, 9 months down the road, and people are placing their chips now. And that's the way that this market tends to go. What we've seen is 40 years ago, you didn't know what the Fed was thinking. The Fed worked behind a curtain, and every now and again they pop out and they'd say rate hike or rate cut, and then they close the curtain again, and you were left to guess, why is the Fed doing what they're doing? Well, we're in a new era where we've got transparency. So we know there's two things here. There's job growth, there's inflation control. And right now everyone's on the inflation control because jobs are on automatic. You even mentioned before, jobs are still incredibly strong. So until we see that, a situation where jobs start getting weaker, job growth either stops or reverses, or we start seeing large cuts, we're going to be focused on inflation. And that's where the market is. And the market thinks that because of some of the lowering in prices that we've seen with oil, that's the main driver. That's the one that hits the political spectrum. That's the one that hits producer prices. That's the one that hits you at the register. Gas and oil affects everything. And now that we've seen that starting to come off, people are thinking, okay, this means that inflation numbers going forward, maybe they cool down as well. So this is where we're at. We're in a good situation. There's definitely strong demand. There's positive flows into funds. And the other issue that we're running into is August tends to be a relatively sleepy month in terms of issuance. So right now we're in a situation, we're in a supply demand imbalance. So what we're seeing is people are trying to chase the market a little bit.
So Robert, what I think I heard you said is for the most part, the fixed income market pretty much behaves the same way the equity market does. It hates uncertainty. And I think in the beginning of the year, the sell-off could be attributed to the fixed income market lost faith in Jerome Powell and his team to corral inflation. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what you're implying is that that faith or confidence has been restored over the last several rate hikes and comments that they've made.
Yes, but I think that it's to a certain extent, the Fed gets short shrift. And they don't get a lot of confidence, and they don't get a lot of love from the markets in certain aspects. And one of the questions here is, and this is one of the concerns, is what if we're not done? What if the Fed is going to keep their foot on the gas, keep raising rates until they've strangled the economy? And that's one of the big fears. And it's such a tough balance because you can find, if you go into the news, you can find an article that's going to support any idea that you have. You know, we've got to listen to what the Fed says. That at the end of the day, you and I can talk till we're blue in the face, but the Fed's the one who's going to make the determination. The Fed's the one that's going to affect Fed funds, which affects prime, which affects your credit card balances, which affects everything. So, you know, just recently, Mary Daly said that they're nowhere near done with the efforts to tamp down inflation. You know, the Cleveland Fed president said they need compelling evidence. And 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks of oil prices coming down is not, I don't think, is enough evidence. So we've got to be careful. This can reverse. We saw it today just on those comments. You know, the 10-year treasury sold off 20 basis points. You know, it can move. It can still move. So we're in a situation where, you know, I personally, I have a lot of respect for the Fed and what they're doing. I felt that they had conviction. They're definitely showing it from going from 50 to 75 basis points. They're not overshooting their skis by going to 100, which for in a brief moment, we all had this concern that that was going to happen. I think that they're going to try and do everything they can to make this a soft landing and restrain inflation. But, you know, they can still, as long as the job market stays firm, you know, they've got room to run.
Rob, one of the things that, and we brought this up in our opening, is we're trying to figure out, like everybody else, whether this is going to be, I hate to even use the word soft landing, but any landing where you get to walk away from is a good one, right? Or a crash landing, because they over-tighten on interest rates. But for our purposes, I'm looking at the quality of the bonds we want to buy and just how much risk do we want to take? Because clearly, if we go into a deep recession, I don't want to own lesser quality bonds. If we go into, I want to be as high quality as I can get my hands on, and the exact opposite if we get this soft landing. So do you have any views on quality-wise, what you would focus on here, where you would try to focus most of your dollars?
Well, I think that the two areas where I would avoid to a certain extent, three areas that I would try to avoid to a certain extent, I think that's the better way, is because remember, we are risk averse. Like you said, you're trying to protect your money. You know what I mean? We're trying to be risk averse. If you're trying to get into municipal bonds to knock it out of the park, I can tell you that we're not the investment for you. So you've got to look at the economy and say, okay, well, what can go poorly and could affect receipts with what the government or what the bonds are going to be used to pay for. Now, we've got a common one right now, which isn't based on the recession, but it definitely would have some effect. When you look at certain transportation bonds, like anything that's related to commuters right now, the MTA, that's the big one. It's been the big one forever, where you've got to say receipts are going to be down. If people don't have jobs, they're not commuting to work. And so bonds like that, you want to be a little bit careful with. I said the MTA, but the MTA to a certain extent is a red herring. That's got good backing from the state government as well. It's one of those too big to fail type credits. So I don't think that everyone should be selling MTA, but it's just an example of a commuter backed system that you want to pay attention to.
And then another type, tunnels and bridges,
tolls, tolls. Exactly. Now, the other area that you would want to pay attention to is you're going to want to pay attention to things that are either backed by income taxes. Now, like New York City has got what they call PIT bonds, personal income tax bonds. And these bonds are backed by exactly that, by tax receipts. The third area that you want to be careful with, or part of the second area, I should say, is going to be sales tax bonds. Because if you go into a recession, people spend less. If people spend less, less sales tax is collected. The last one, and this has always been a more riskier area of the market, is going to be anything that you could qualify as an industrial revenue bond or something that's based on a small specific project. I think a good example of this is the debacle that's going on in New Jersey that's been happening for a while, which we call the American Dream. So this is, they just missed a payment. And this is, this is the type of industry or the type of bond that you have to be very careful about, because they need to have revenue coming in. They directly need to have spending happening in their stores. New York City collecting their sales taxes, well, how many thousands of stores are there? They've got a big pool to pull from. And some, so although some might not do well, others will do well. But something like the American Dream, it's kind of an all or nothing thing. So you want to be careful about what you're selecting. You can look at things that are tried and true. You can look at general obligation bonds. Those are property taxes. Those are the core receipts of any government. They're not going to change necessarily in a recession. Yes, properties values can go down, but it's not very often that the municipality is going to start cutting your taxes because of that. Essential utilities. Yes, you might not want to be going out to dinner every night because you don't have the cash to spend, or you're a little concerned about the future, but you're still going to pay your water bill. You're still going to pay your electricity bill. You're still going to pay for your essential utilities. And those are types of bonds which really will hold up well. Now, saying all this and talking about the fear of recession, muni bonds do fairly well in recessions. One of the things that's important to note is twice in the last 40 some odd years, has a recession correlated with negative performance in the municipal bond market. One was 1981, and that was as much the Volcker situation, where he was raising rates, trying to kill stagflation to the extremes. Well, interest rates and prices are inverse. So as he's raising rates, your prices are coming down. That was the big set off there. The other situation was 2008. And we know how big and how destructive that recession was. And so, yes, municipal bonds were affected by that for a host of reasons. But then it's also important to counsel patience. Municipal bonds are a long-term project most of the time. Even if you're just a normal separately managed account investor, you're going to be looking in the 5, 10 to 15 year space. These are long periods of time. We're talking about recession, 2 quarters, half a year. Then we're talking about a bond, which is 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. There's a lot of time for that sort of thing to work itself through, a recession to work through a bond. These municipalities, they have some of the best reserves. They're in the best positions for this sort of sell-off. We saw that in 2020, where we didn't see a lot of defaults. We didn't really see any defaults on general obligation bonds or utility bonds. There were no concerns for that. So what you see is you see, okay, municipal bonds might have a down year. Well, let's look at 2008. They were down about 2.5%. Municipal bonds as a general idea or general investment. They were up 13% the following year. Because what happened? We had to cut rates. We went into an extreme easy money environment. And this is the same thing that we're looking at now. We're coming out of that easy money environment, and prices went very well. We're seeing the opposite. Now we've got very high yields. So let's say, hypothetically, we go into a recession. We've got those high yields. Remember, yields go down, prices go up. So the Fed starts cutting rates. Our bond prices start going up. So as an investor holding a portfolio, you're in a good position. What you're holding in municipal bonds, these guys have levers that they can pull that aren't necessarily connected to the actual economy. They can raise your property taxes. They can raise your utility rates. They can do things to make sure that they have enough liquidity to pay off those bonds and you don't have to worry about it. They don't even want to take a credit hit if they don't have to. So you're in a good position with municipal bonds, even when we're in a recession. It's a long-term investment. It's not something that we need to get concerned about over 1, 2, 3 quarters.
Robert, thank you for that answer. We are bumping up against a break. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we will come back to continue the conversation with Robert Morgan from DCM Advisors, Director of Fixed Income.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
When you're thinking about where to park your cash, for over 30 years in the business, I've been a fan of funds like the Labenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund. It's managed for cash and designed so the interest income you receive is free from federal taxes. And who doesn't love paying less taxes?
Mike, generating interest that's free from federal taxes is appealing, but I've been in this business for a long time, and people love the potential for more income on their hard-earned cash.
Sorry, Dom, but the beauty of the funds is paying less taxes on cash.
No, my friend, it's the potential for more income.
Mm-mm. Less taxes.
More income.
Less taxes.
More income.
Less for taxes. Your cash. More income. Ask your advisor about the Labenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund.
Less taxes.
Or find out more at dcmadvisors.com.
Well, Dom, one thing I know we agree on, it's not what you earn.
It's what you keep.
Labenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund. Symbol LETAX. LETAX.
Before investing, you should carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. This and other information is in the prospectus, a copy of which may be obtained by calling 800-441-7031. Please read the prospectus carefully before you invest. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. There is no guarantee that this or any investing strategy will be successful. An investor should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the fund carefully before investing. The fund is distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC, member FINRA. The fund may invest in municipal securities, the interest on which may be subject to federal alternative minimum tax. After the fund buys a security, the IRS may determine that a bond issued as tax-exempt should in fact be taxable. There is no affiliation between DCM Advisors, LLC, and Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC. DCM Advisors and Ultimus Fund Distributors are not affiliated with Labenthal Financial Services, Inc., or Labenthal Global Advisors, LLC.
You are listening to the Labenthal Report. If you're listening to the show live, join in on our discussion with questions or comments at 1-866-472-5790. Again, that's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to contact@labenthal.com. Now, back to the Labenthal Report.
All right, I'm Michael Hartzman, back with my partner Dominic Tavella. With our guest this evening, Robert Morgan, Director of Fixed Income at DCM Advisors. You know, Robert, as you were explaining on the end of the last segment, I had so many different questions to ask you about the muni market and what we've all lived through and the history of it. But I think, you know, you mentioned 2008, and I think that's a great example, because in 2008, there were genuine fear that municipalities were just going to flat out run out of money, whether it was the city of Chicago, the city of New York, Sacramento in California, where you just had this feeling that there was this municipal apocalypse coming with all the pension debt that they owed on their books. And this, you know, magic. And then there was Puerto Rico, of course, right? That was the poster child of bad debt. And again, when we went through this in June, we didn't hear any of that. These municipalities, I think, never had more cash. They were flush with money. And that's another, you know, that was the conversation Dom and I had to have with our clients, begging them to be patient and hang on.
And, in fact, and maybe a buying opportunity.
Yeah.
If they had gotten beat up as bad as they had.
I think you guys are absolutely right. States and local municipalities, they're in very strong positions, and they have been traditionally. I mean, a lot of these bond issuers, they're well managed, and they've got a lot of levers that they can pull. And even when things go bad, and I'm not saying that this is going to happen the next time, but we can see when things go truly bad. Well, let's just go quickly back to the pandemic. There is you know, Uncle Sam, who is willing to step in and to help give them cash to go to make sure that everything is going to be fine. I mean, it's something like $300 billion in cash sitting with municipalities as a result of the federal help that we saw during the pandemic. We also got to remember that these municipalities, this isn't their first rodeo. This isn't going to be, if we see it, it's not going to be their first recession. Municipalities are disciplined. And what they do a lot of the time is they will come up with exactly what you need to have, a rainy day fund. They will have cash out there to bridge the gap because that they know that these problems tend to be, hopefully, short, sweet gaps in income, gaps in problems. Bankruptcies, especially on the municipal level, they take a long time. They take, this is, you know, you've got a situation where, you know, we talk about things that are going to be collected in, you know, or the money is going to be budgeted in let's say March and won't get spent till September, October, November. Then what they're trying to do is they do a fair amount of financial planning to try and make sure that their budget is going to actually be respective of what income that they're bringing in. If they need to make cuts, they'll make a little bit of cuts. But bondholders tend to be sacred. We do have situations where things get out of hand. Puerto Rico, that was something that we talked about in the last time as well. Puerto Rico was a outlier. There are other municipalities which have also had problems for various reasons. Detroit being the biggest problem in the continental U.S. And these are issues which, as professional bond investors, you see coming. They're not overnight things. It would be a shock for me to turn on the news tomorrow or me to get in front of my Bloomberg tomorrow and find out almost any municipality without warning has gone belly up. We had one case in 1994 where there was out in Orange County, California, and it was this short, sharp shock where if I remember correctly all the details, there was a question about some alternative investments that they had made that had gone the wrong way. And they said, well, wait a minute, we don't have money to pay. Within months, everything was right as rain again. So, you know, states and municipalities right now, as we speak, they are in a very strong position. They are flush with cash. They've had 2 years of good, solid growth as we recovered from the pandemic. Even the rating agencies agree. You know, Moody's at this point, I think that they've upgraded $300 billion of municipal bonds. They've downgraded 27. Okay. So you can really see that the dynamic here that we're in is municipal finances are stronger now than they were in January. And I don't think that there's going to be something that's coming down in the pipeline that I can see in terms of a recession that's going to knock them off of that.
So Rob, let's, you know, again, me and Mike are dealing with clients every day and we're trying to make them understand, you know, the dynamics going on today. But if you're a buyer today, the yields on these bonds now have become respectable again. We went for a long time where the yields were so low. The fact that interest rates have come up is actually a benefit if you're a buyer. You want to address that a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, now that we've seen this run through in July, one of the things that we've seen is rates have come down a little bit, but they are still respectable. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I can tell you that ever since the Great Recession in 2008, things have been painful as a bond investor. You had not capturing income to really make it worth it, it feels like. You know, you're protecting your money, but it, you know, sometimes I just felt like maybe my clients would have been better stuffing it in a mattress because they didn't want to go out 15 or 20 or 30 years. They wanted to be in a section where they could be relatively liquid. And I would be buying bonds at 1%, 1% for 5-year paper. Well, now that's, you can get 2% in 5 years. You can get in 10 years if you wanted to stretch it out a little bit and your investment manager is really actually looking at credits and looking to trying to find those things that are undervalued, you can still touch 225, 250. That's tax-free. So remember, you've got that multiplier effect of depending on what your tax bracket is. And that actually makes it a really solid, good source of income at this point. So yeah, I think that this is one of the things that's precipitated this move. The market felt that they had reached a level where investors said, you know something, I don't care. This is the best yield that I've seen in 5 or 10 years. I want to get on top of it. I want to get in on it. And I'm willing to lock that in. And once again, this is the nice thing about munis. You put your money into municipal bonds. If you've got the right investment manager, you don't have to worry about it. It's not something that you have to worry about. You know that you're going to get your payment every 6 months. You know when that bond matures, you're going to get your principal back. So, you know, yes, I think that rates are still attractive historically, especially over from where they've been in the past 10 years. I'm perfectly happy buying bonds at these levels for my clients.
So to that end, Robert, let me ask you this. When interest rates were 1%, like you just mentioned, munis were one of the few games in town for clients who wanted a little safety and generate income. Now with interest rates climbing, CDs might become a little bit more attractive. Fixed annuity rates might become a little bit more attractive. So who's the muni bond market competing with? Are they competing with corporate bond money? Are they competing with the nervous stock investor? You know, does CD money kind of impinge on your ability to track dollars? Where's your competition in a rising interest rate environment?
In a rising interest rate environment, I think that our biggest competitor is going to be corporates. And the reason why is we do tend to correlate fairly closely to treasuries. We've kind of got our fixed percentages that we will trade as a ratio, as they call it, a percentage of treasuries. And that's on, you know, what you're actually getting in hand. And then you've got to take the tax exemption and then you multiply for that. So you can kind of figure out where you are. And munis look good in relative to treasuries. It's corporates where people start to think that they can get just more on an after-tax basis on a corporate. But the problem is corporates are not as safe. You've really making a decision here when you're going into municipal bonds that yes, corporates, because there are so many credits out there, because yields are higher than treasuries on an after-tax basis as well, they would be municipals competitors. And that's what I see a lot of clients. They say, hey, look, you know, can we look at taxable munis? Can we look at taxable corporate bonds? And they want to kind of try and look at the portfolio. But what we try and do is, look, we'll keep it simple because the municipal bond will give you a level of security that very, very few corporate names can. And at the end of the day, this is the money that you want to be able to sleep on. This is the money that you want to make sure that's going to be there. Yeah. Is it highly doubtful that Apple or Amazon is going out of business? Absolutely. But, you know, there are plenty of large company names out there, which we thought would be around forever, that aren't. And municipal bonds, New York City is still here. New York City has been told to drop dead. They're still here. New York City has gone through dark times. They're still here. They went through the recession. They're still here. Municipalities are going to be around. And so it's from a yield perspective, yeah, look at corporates. But if you're actually looking to protect your money and you want it to be there, if you want to take that leap and invest it for 20 or 25 years, you can't tell me that some of these corporations, they're definitely going to be here. I can tell you New York City is going to be here.
And Rob, I want to pick up on that point because me and Mike deal with individuals for the most part. But there's a lot of institutions that buy these bonds as part of their long-term portfolios.
Yeah, I mean, you've got depending on where corporate tax rates are at the time, only if select corporations and banks can really take advantage of these rates. So you have insurance companies, and insurance companies are very big players in the market. And yes, they will absolutely get into municipal bonds because, once again, it's dependable income with good credit metrics, which they will use to build portfolios like pensions that, you know, needs to be there. They need to be able to pay this money out over a certain amount of time. So that's one of the big advantages. You know, if you've got a smartly constructed portfolio that has a reasonable amount of credit supervision in it, and this means that your investment manager is reading the paper, looking at the Bloomberg, listening to the stories, listening to the chatter from salesmen and what have you, it would be surprising to have a train wreck in your portfolio. It would be surprising to have a bankruptcy. You know, I've been doing this so long. I'd have a lot of choice words for somebody who came to me with an investment manager who said, oh, well, you know, yeah, he was buying all this stuff and it went bankrupt. Or we had problems. You know, he bought nursing homes and he bought airlines and he bought the American dream. This is somebody who's not paying attention to the market. And the market is very easy to predict in terms of credit quality. It's solid. It's always been solid. We've had people there was one famous case of somebody I won't name who said we were going to see billions and billions and billions of dollars of bankruptcies. And this was back in 2011, 2012.
Still waiting. Yeah, me and Mike remember that scenario well.
Still waiting.
So, Rob, we have 2 minutes left.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you, you know, the question that's always a cliche. What's keeping you up at night now that would potentially, you know, unhinge the muni market again?
I think that the one thing that we could see, at least in the short term, is if we, for some reason, continue to see strong inflation numbers. I don't see it necessarily happen. I do think that they're going to get a handle on this. But if for some reason we get into that situation where the Fed really has to chase after inflation, they really have to start shocking the market, irrespective of what happens to jobs, because they're so concerned about that sort of thing. It's a worry in the back of my mind. I don't think it's probable. I don't, but you're talking about, you know, the fears that keep you up at night, because that would send a shock to the market. It will send a shock to all the markets, but it will directly affect the municipal bond and the fixed income markets, because they're all dependent on what the Fed's doing and where they put rates at, because they're the anchor.
Rob, I want to thank you for your appearance tonight and for, getting some more clarity on the muni bond market and where the sun is shining this time. Unlike when we spoke to you last time, where we could just hope for sunnier days.
True, true. And I think we're going to have a good rest of the summer.
Looking forward to that and a little less volatility. So thanks, Rob, for your guidance and your voice of reason.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Rob, enjoy the rest of your summer and we'll have you back soon. We'll be right back, everybody.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Small businesses are in trouble, and it didn't just start with COVID-19. From the recession several years ago to the revolution of e-commerce giants more recently, small businesses are getting hit hard and need to come back. Tune in to Business Buzz and Business Watch. It's two shows in one, hosted by Frank Hellring. We'll help your small business bounce back with best practices, guest experts, and resources that you can use to strengthen your small business. Listen Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America Business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business talk.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to the Labenthal Report. If you're listening to the show live, join in on our discussion with questions or comments at 1-866-472-5790. Again, that's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to contact@labenthal.com. Now, back to the Labenthal Report.
All right, I'm Michael Hartzman, back with Dominic Tavella for a quick wrap of the show. And Dom, this evening was the baseball trading deadline. And as I was following the headlines all day, I got to think that these teams, they're like portfolio managers, or they're like investors. You know, the San Diego Padres, they went all in, and they got Juan Soto, and they gave up a bunch of prospects, and maybe they're going to pay this kid $440 million or more. But they went all in, and they shook up, you know, their portfolio. They shook up their lineup. You know, the Mets tweaked their lineup. The Mets liked their allocation, and they just kind of did a little tweaking here and there. And the Yankees, while they have the best record in baseball, they were a little bit more aggressive. You know, they made some changes to their lineup and allocation that was, you know, maybe they didn't have to, but maybe they're looking for a sure thing. So that's what I was thinking today is literally these baseball teams, Dominic, they're like portfolio managers and investors.
Mike, I think you stole the words out of my mouth. I use that analogy when we're trying to describe to clients the portfolios that we're building them. We're trying to put the best team out there that plays good defense, that plays good offense. And guess what? Every once in a while, we got to pluck out a player that's not quite doing their job. Sorry, fired. And then we plug in a new player. So we don't have to worry about salary cap, and we don't have to worry about restrictions and deadlines, but we are, in all seriousness, looking at the lineup every day and going, is this the best lineup for what we think the game is going to be tonight? And is this the best lineup for the next 3 months and 6 months? And trying to make very conscious decisions, not overthink it, I hope, but yes, every day, Mike.
But you know, but the thing is, Dom, we try to resist that, right? Because in a rising market, especially, you know, how many times have you gotten a phone call, Dominic, why don't you just sell everything and buy X, whatever X might be? And we cringe. So no, it's not what we want to do. But as a baseball fan, are the fans in San Diego ecstatic tonight?
Yeah, here's the difference, Mike. And I'm sorry, because I'm really going to emphasize that. You and I get that call in the middle of March when bonds just got decimated. Mm-hmm. We get that call in the middle of June when mm-hmm. stocks were at an annual low. So usually, and I understand it, people are looking at their life savings, their retirement, that sense of, oh my God, I might lose everything I have, which it's nearly impossible. Let's just say nearly impossible. But it's that panic moment. So we're getting the calls usually at the worst possible time, where you would think these teams, not always correct, try to sell high and buy low, or at least add value to the portfolio.
Yeah, you're right. But just remember, we're in a period now of fear. But a year ago, Dominic, we were talking about meme stocks, and we were talking about Bitcoin. And we got those calls then too, Dominic. Sell everything or send me my money, because my brother-in-law, you know, has made all this money in Bitcoin, and I'm going to open up a Robinhood account, and I'm going to do the same thing. Yeah. So it's not even in the bad markets, Dom. It happens in times of euphoria. Yeah.
Why aren't
we
buying certain of these securities that now have lost 80-90% of their value, right? So I think it's kind of ironic, and maybe we are ending on that note or getting close to it, that we're sitting here talking about boring municipal bonds. And I don't think either one of us would ever say 100% of your portfolio should be in this category, but a portion of your portfolio that is pretty solid, that generates income on a regular basis, not likely to have dramatic volatility, that's not a bad place to park some of your money, Mike.
So what you're telling me, Dominic, is a municipal bond is a solid 260 hitter, 15 homers, 70 RBIs, slot him into the sixth spot in the lineup. Is that what you're telling me?
You need some of those players, Mike, because I know when things are going great, you're like, oh my God, I could get somebody who's going to hit me 30 home runs, if we're going to stay with the baseball analogy. But sometimes those big time home run hitters strike out a lot, right? So having those players that are consistent, methodical, solid, stable, I know boring, sometimes people get like, what do you have the money there for? But boring can be good, especially times like this.
So at the risk of pissing off half of our clients, Dominic, let's go Mets.
I'm grateful for that. But as you know, Mike, not a Yankee hater, and would love to see both teams in the World Series. That would be just phenomenal for New York.
That would be fun. On that note, Dom, we are out of time. We are taking next week off. We'll be back August 16th. And be safe, everybody. We'll see you down the road.
Have a great evening, Mike. Good night, all.
Thanks for tuning in to the Labenthal Report. Dominic Tavella and Michael Hartzman will be back for our next program, airing next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a great week.